Hello and welcome to the latest Bloodbird podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe Rimmer, and we're talking Carabao Cup tonight. So we have rotated the squad. Paul Gorst is here because, Paul, you always demand, like Salah, he didn't start last night, so this analogy doesn't work, but you demand your place in the side.
Yeah. Cups, leagues, just get me in the side. Yeah. I want to start. So what minutes? Game's under my belt.
You're on the pens as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Beth Lindbop is here. How are you, Beth?
I'm good. Hoping I can emulate Joel Quantz's performance from last night as a sub coming in. So, yeah, good.
Yeah, and Steve Killers here? Obviously.
Good, yeah. Don't feel as much as an amazing talent with the creaking bones, but I feel good.
No. Well, it was another good win, another 3-1 win, another come-from-behind win, Gorsty last night. Just this sort of encouraging season continues. I know it was an early goal for Leicester, but Liverpool, I mean, I don't think I've seen a team have so many shots cleared off the line or, you know, go so close to going in one game, but they got the job done and looked quite convincing.
Yeah, I'm just going to start sending you the reports before that. Yeah, Liverpool win 3-1 and they've conceded early. I think now, because they conceded first yesterday, I think they've come from behind 5 times this season now, which is one more than the entirety of last season, which is unbelievable, really. I mean, that kind of paints the picture of a team who are now finding the mental strength once again. I know Klopp said a couple of weeks ago that he doesn't believe that the mentality monsters that they want to wear just yet. But it's certainly a good string to have to about, isn't it? When you go a goal down, you do have that power to come back. And I think now with Liverpool concede, you're never overly concerned. You do think that they've got the strength and depth to come back into the game. And it's a bit of a strange one. You know, me and Steve were there working, and I think Liverpool just got caught cold a bit. You know, Simicast got stood on, and if VAR was in play, I think they probably look at that and decide that it is a foul. Casey McAteer was their only real threat. Leicester, he started wide on the left and kind of exposed that Curtis Jones position, which I'm sure we'll come on to. But other than that, they didn't do a thing. That they came, Graham Gallagher didn't have much to do with his hands at all. Looked assured of the feet as he always does. And Liverpool were fully deserving of the win in the end. Just surprised that it took them to the second half to equalise, because Ben Doak hit the underside of the bar. Cody Gakpo had one off the line. I think the keeper made a decent save. Rowan Jota almost got in. I think I've seen a tweet from Andrew Beasley at half time that Liverpool have had 15 shots, which is the most they've had in the previous kind of 53 first half, so 56 or something. It was a remarkable stat. It kind of shows you why or how they were dominating, but dominating in a bit of a new look team. There's, you know, some of the patterns weren't there attacking wise, but I don't think there was any ever real concern that Liverpool weren't going to win.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, I started writing down players' names. Usually after a game, you sort of write 2 or 3 names down and talk about their performances. But I got to the point where I was writing almost everyone down, because it felt like there were quite a few encouraging performances last night. So I put it on you. You're sitting there shuffling, you look slightly uncomfortable, like you're in a job interview. So I put it on you. Who stood out for you? Any encouraging performances that you thought stood out last night?
I think the obvious one is Ben Doak. You said earlier in the podcast a few days ago, like, doesn't look like a player that's sort of, there's no weak players anymore. And he came in, he took to his own. He's started off strong, and he's just doing like weird flicks in the box and they're coming off. He looks a threat, and he looks like someone you can hang your hat on. But it's hard to sort of put any real pins on anyone. He would be impressed because everyone done well in the second half. I think the first half, everyone sort of fell down a peg or two. Few strands of frustration when there's quite passive play from the likes of Simicast and Endo, but in the end, he sort of came into their own. And like Gorsty said, he didn't really look like any shadow like they were going to get beat in the end.
Yeah. What about you, Beth? Who stood out for you?
I think the obvious one in the second half was Dominic Szoboszlai, wasn't it? I mean, he only got, 25 minutes at the end of the game, but scores that decisive goal to put Liverpool in front. And, you know, it's a continuation of his exceptional start to life in a Liverpool shirt. And I think the reason fans have taken so, you know, so kindly to him, and he's such a fan of what he's done in the opening weeks of the season, is I think even at the height of Liverpool's success under Jurgen Klopp, it's always felt like they were missing that world-class central midfielder. Obviously, Fabinho was exceptional in that holding role, but in terms of players, you know, the Kevin De Bruyne-esque who can create and score from midfield, I felt like that was the one sort of missing puzzle piece to this team. And, you know, Szoboszlai's come in and he's got a bit of swagger about him as well. You know, he doesn't seem to feel any pressure wearing that infamous number 8 shirt for Liverpool. And, You know, I think the fact that the Jurgen Klopp was able to rest him for 70 minutes and then he can come on and make an impact like that is a testament to how strong this squad is, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to talk about Sabo's life because we've talked about them on every pod since the start of the season, but you can't not, can you? Ghosty, I mean, I think Beth nailed it there, the swagger that he plays with, and to come on and make an impact. You know, he doesn't look like a man feeling his way into life at Anfield, does he? Looks like
not at all. No, he doesn't look like he's one bit fazed by the fact that he's a 60 million player. I've seen quite a few, you know, little bits and pieces saying, you know, what a bargain, but you're not a bargain at 60 million. You're the fourth most expensive player of all time at Liverpool, but he's where, like Beth says, he's wearing the number 8 without any danger of it weighing him down. He just looks like he's purpose built to become a star, and I can't believe he's only 22. You know, he's obviously moved away from Hungary when he was, I think he was like 13, 14. So he's been kind of, he's known he's going to be a top European player for a good number of years. When he moved to Leipzig, that was a big stepping stone because they're almost a kind of one of the elite feeder clubs, if you like, to the bigger ones, to the European giants, the proper ones. And now he's got his move to Liverpool and he's just taken to Anfield like a duck to water. And that goal last night was sensational, wasn't it? You know, Gerrard-esque, De Bruyne-esque, whoever you want to say, it just crashed in off the other side of the bar. And like I say, you never really felt that Liverpool weren't going to win that, but once he pinged that one in, the only thought was, you know, how many is it going to be?
It reminded me a lot of Oxlade-Chamberlain's against the way one touch, get out his feet, and then arrowed. Alongside him, Steve, I wanted to talk about Endo a little bit. We haven't had too many chances to see him in action. It's fair to say, I think he struggled in Austria a bit and obviously was introduced in difficult circumstances in some of the other games. What did you make of him last night? He seems to use the ball quite well. I suppose it's difficult to sort of analyse him when you're playing against the Championship side. Was it an encouraging one for him?
Yeah, I found it interesting, his comments. He said he's been told to play higher up the pitch, and for a player who's sort of settling in, I think we see it with Fabinho, don't we? How long it took him, and I think Mendo's in the same sort of boat. He wasn't maybe out of depth yesterday, but he was sort of maybe a bit sluggish, a bit slow to the play. But even in flashes, he was like playing out wide, and he was often like the linchpin, sort of playing it, starting the attacks from wide. But in the second half in particular, when I think only a few times he came out on the counter-attack, but most of the time, like we said with Fabinho, he was extinguishing fires, and he looks a threat, and probably gets one of the easiest assists. It wasn't even an easy assist. It was a great pass for Szoboszlai. It sort of encapsulates someone who's starting to settle. And I think I said that on the debrief yesterday, Klopp's getting more and more options and more of a headache, but I'm sure he's delighted to have more of a headache for selections and injuries.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's an interesting point you make about the pass, because I think a lot of people, it's all about Spurs, and it was. But I noticed that Klopp had mentioned in his press conference after the game, Beth, that Endo got that ball and he fizzed it forward, and it's those sorts of quick balls that he needs to play. And that, I think, was something that Fabinho did so well, didn't he, during his time at Liverpool. He could get the ball forward and not just sideways and backwards, which a lot of players do in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, last night I was impressed with him in the second half especially, but it wasn't until this morning, and I watched a little compilation of eventually performances, I didn't realise sort of how many progressive passes he did actually play. And again, it's the sort of thing that, you know, you might dismiss as saying, oh, it's only, you know, a 10-yard pass or whatever, but, you know, it's zipping those balls into the feet of players who can really go and do some damage at the top end of the pitch, and that's integral to propelling this Liverpool side forward. So a really encouraging display from him, and I'd be interested to see him play, you know, at the weekend, to be honest. I'm sure we'll get on to team selection, but I think if he's going to excel in a Liverpool shirt, he's got to be given a chance and a run of games, and I think he acquitted himself really well last night.
Yeah. What do you think of this young winger, Gerald Kouncer?
Yeah,
leaving people to dead.
Set the back slide, flash wide forward. He took that really well, didn't he? You know, That's what you were hoping Ben Doak was going to do. Ben Doak got it so many times, and every time he gets it, you're on the edge of your seat, because you know he's got the ability to beat a man and get the cross in. Sometimes Doak finds himself just holding on to it a little bit too long. And I think that's come from, I know he didn't ask about Doug, but I think that's come from him always being the best player whenever he's on the pitch, on the 16s, on the 17s. But now he's in the first team, he'll learn over time to release it quicker. And Kwanzaa did that superbly, didn't he? Just ghosted into the box. Where's me man? There's the ball. Chatter sticks it away. And it was a great end to the game for him, because I think he's been a little bit of a success story already.
Yeah.
Success story for Liverpool, Kwanzaa, because there was loads of chatter, wasn't there, about them not buying a fit centre-back. And I could understand it, to be honest. I think I probably agreed with it at the time. But a few games into it, you're starting to see what the picture is now for Kwanzaa, and can he make the step up? And, you know, I think we will see a lot of him in the Europa League, certainly in the Carabao Cup. And it's just a case of when, you know, if he's got someone like a Canate or a Van Dijk next to him, I think that'll only improve him. And plus, he had an excellent game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, it's funny the concept, because I think Liverpool should have signed the centre-half and stuff, but I still think that might come back to bite them a little bit. But young players need chances. He's got his chance. I mean, the next 12 months, the rest of the season, I should say, is massive for him, isn't it? Because if he can continue putting in performances like he has, might change Liverpool's strategy perhaps a little bit next summer.
It's almost a surprise that he's played half a season of men's professional football.
Yeah.
Not so long ago, I remember reading a piece from Joey Barton where he said he was a bit inexperienced and he's lashing out at players and stuff like that. And he looked like he's come into his own. He looked like a perfect deputy to the likes of Konate or even Van Dijk. But I just think when you've got the likes of Matip out of contract and a few others in defence who not yet stepped up, he's putting in them composed performances. He's stepping out in the back and he doesn't look like he's overawed at all. There was one moment where it sort of just went through his feet where I think he was sort of caught in between whether to go to the man or tackle. But from then, he just doesn't look like anyone who's overawed at the challenge. He looks like Curtis Jones and the rest of the young players. He's relishing every minute of it.
Thanks for mentioning Curtis Jones, because that's a good segue, Beth. Captained his boyhood club last night, playing in this right back role, which I suppose Klopp didn't have a great deal of options, but the hybrid role. What did you make of his performance? And you know, it's just been a good season for him. I mean, even in difficult circumstances last night, make something out of it, doesn't
he? Yeah, it has, and obviously a hugely proud moment for him captaining his boyhood club, and totally deserved as well. I think, you know, if you look at the end of last season and the unbeaten run that Liverpool are on, I think it's 19 games now unbeaten in all competitions. He's been an integral part of that. And for, you know, the club to bring in world-class players, or players who could very much be world-class players, in Alexis McAllister and Dominic Szoboszlai, and Curtis Jones to still be retaining a spot in this Liverpool side, is a testament to how highly he must be thought of by Jurgen Klopp. I think playing him in that right-back or hybrids, full-back role, whatever you want to call it, that's not where you're going to see the best of him. I think, you know, a large part of that Leicester goal came down to a lack of defensive awareness, I think, from Curtis Jones. He just lets McAteer run off his shoulder. And I think, you know, I wouldn't like to see him play there too frequently. I suppose in games against lesser opposition, it's an option. And, you know, certainly there's obviously a willingness from Jones to help the team where possible, which is always positive. But yeah, I think, you know, an excellent few months for him, and long may it continue.
Yeah. Of course, I don't talk about it a great deal because I want this podcast to be all about me. But I love the Carabao Cup. It's great fun, isn't it? And last night, another good win. You know, you see good goals, you see a bit of chaos, you see different players.
Yeah.
But I mean, I suppose I think of it as quite an important competition, especially when you've got a big squad, you've got young players coming through. And this was a great example, wasn't it, last night, of Klopp being able to use his squad, bring on some senior stars, blood some young players. I mean, it would be good if they can stay in this competition, won't it? Because it would get people chance.
I'm totally with you on the Carabao Cup, loving, by the way. Because they're all night games.
Yeah.
When you're out
of VAR is another thing.
No VAR. Straight to pens, not this messing about with extra time.
Yeah.
When you're out of it, it's not disrupting your weekend schedule, because, you know, say Liverpool go out the FA Cup in the third round and they're on play on the fourth round. You get two players you don't really see too often. There's always a crazy game at some stage of the competition. And it's all done and dusted by February, so I'm all for the Carabao Cup. But you're right, it is, you know, it's obviously the fourth priority for Liverpool. Maybe it should be third, but and also you don't get people moaning about disrespecting the cup. And
you can do what you want.
Do whatever you want.
You enjoy it.
Maybe you're in midfield and no one's banned an eyelid.
Yeah, impression.
But yeah, it is. It's important in terms of, you know, the strength and depth that Klopp's got means that he can have a good a right old goal of it, and they're not having. Look, last night there was no Salah.
Yeah,
Van Dijk was kicking his heels on the bench. No Andy Robertson, no Alisson Becker, Luis Diaz was on the bench, and they're still getting through quite comfortably using players like Ben Doak and Jarrell Kwanza, and you know, even to a lesser extent Endo, who's not played too many minutes. And then he is showing the true power of a squad by bringing on the likes of Nunes and there was like, you know, 60 million players apiece, aren't they? And the thing that excites me is, I think I might have mentioned it on Monday's pod, is Liverpool's front options are so strong that whatever team Klopp wants to play, there's always going to be at least two international calibre forwards in that department, whether it's Diaz or Nunes, Chota, Gakpo. Probably not going to use Salah too much in it until maybe the semi-finals, but that is strong enough to score goals, whoever they're against. So why not go for it? You know, look at who are already out. You know, there's a string of Premier League clubs, including Man City.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle have got United, have they? So one of those two are going to go out. So why can't Liverpool go for it?
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to have to use the big hitters every week in this competition. So let's go for it and see where they end up.
It's a momentum builder as well, isn't it? You know, I know things have fallen apart a bit for them, but you know, United were last season and there was like a feel-good factor for them, and I think it helped massively in the season and went for all four, winning that competition. It just, and it gets people, you know, I think about that season, you think about Minamino, it had him involved and he had great Origi as well. They had great moments, Minamino's goal against Leicester, that must put them in a really good place wherever you need them in that season.
Well, Pep Lind said on Tuesday that Jota said to him, you know, the most important thing about that quadruple season is we stayed in the League Cup until right to the end, because you win it and then there's a feel-good factor around the place. Suddenly Klopp starts getting asked questions about extending a stay and everyone's in great mood and, you know, a huge morale boost for you to take into that kind of final third of the season, which we know Liverpool typically come on strong anyway, don't they? So, I see no reason why they shouldn't be going for it. Okay, the prize money and all that is nowhere near, you know, Champions League or anything like that. But there's a reason Liverpool have won it 9 times and they're going for a 10th, a record 10th, is because it's the kind of springboard that gives you for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Just a quick word to stay on Darwin Nunes, who just seems to have this ability to lift Anfield. And, you know, again, he didn't score last night, but he seemed to be involved in so many chances. He seemed to put Liverpool back on the front foot and give them a bit more emphasis when they needed it. I mean, he's a massive favourite, isn't he? And you kind of need those players when you're gathering momentum as a team, don't you?
He doesn't even look like he needs to do anything to lift the crowd.
No.
He literally just steps up and gets a few instructions and instantly the crowd singing his name. And even, I just think, his first involvement in the game, I think Leicester were pretty consistent playing out from the back and had probably played into Liverpool's hands a bit too much. But Liverpool were like harrying in the press. I've said it all season. They've been relentless and it's been a joy to watch, and especially with Nunes gathering that confidence. And just on the earlier point about the Carabao Cup, Gakpo's been struggling this season. He takes a touch and a goal, and the way he finished it with a plump for someone who doesn't really, wasn't having much confidence a few weeks ago, and he finished it like a 30 goals a season striker. And I think with Nunes, it's one of them players that you want to see on the pitch because he is just someone who just causes chaos, and it's just an absolute joy to watch.
The fans feed, don't they, off his enthusiasm, and I think his teammates do as well. He creates space, and even when, you know, that he overruns things, you know, he had a shot the day after coming on, and he probably could have played a pass a couple of times and then end up having a shot putting it wide. But you need that enthusiasm in the team, don't you? You need that sort of that desire. It does open things up for his teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, after last season, obviously was quite turbulent for him, and it's great to see now. He must feel 10 foot tall every time he walks on the pitch. And
he looks happy.
Yeah.
He's enjoying it.
He looks so much more relaxed. I don't know if it was Lindsay who said the other day, you know, his English is much better now, and he just seems to be settling in all aspects on the pitch. But yeah, he's a top player. I think, you know, most Liverpool fans have seen that potential in him for a long time. And I think the nice thing now is, you know, when he spurns a good chance, his head doesn't drop, he doesn't look frustrated, he just keeps on going. He missed a couple of half-decent chances last night, but you don't feel like that's going to knock him back at all. And, you know, that's great to see, and hopefully he'll continue improving over the course of the season.
A quick word before we move on from the game. Of course, the on Gakpo, Steve just mentioned him. A much-needed goal. He seems to be involved in quite a lot of moments. Was unlucky, I think, big time on the header that Comedy cleared up.
Yeah, he had a good game. I like watching Gakpo in the middle because he's got this his touch, he just brings it under control. He's so smooth on the half turn and turns and gets up.
And got a bit of Firmino about
him. Yeah, they're definitely trying to make him into the kind of Firmino Mark II, aren't they? He obviously made his name as a left-sided forward with Holland and PSV, but a little bit of a tactical adjustment since he'd been at Liverpool. But yeah, it was he took the score really well. He was unlucky with, I think it was Connor Cody who blocked it on the line in the first half with the header. There was another one which the keeper saved. Well, yeah, he's I think that was that his second goal of the season after the Wolves game.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be fascinating now for Liverpool's front five to see how many can they end up with as a collective, because I think they're on to 15 or 16 now. Yeah. You'd imagine Salah's going to get upwards of 20, and Nunes is up there. And
I've never seen a player more in my life score so many snide goals. I mean that in a good way. Just comes on, he seems to get one every game. It's just like a little tap.
He's a Liverpool's best finisher, I think. It's and Gakpo again is another one who's learning all the time. And you know, I still think it's going to be Diaz and Nunes for Tottenham, but Gakpo done his chances no harm last night.
We'll talk Tottenham in a minute, but before we do, Beth, seeing as you're here, the WSL starts this weekend. And the fixture list has handed Liverpool a doozy, hasn't it? With going to Arsenal away,
it has.
And they've sold 50,000 tickets, so it's going to be an incredible occasion. Just give us a little bit of an overview of the season, looking ahead to the season. Where will Matt Beard's side be hoping to finish? And pretty tricky one to start with, although they did start with a tricky one last year as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They beat Chelsea on the opening day of the season last year, so I suppose that gives them a good blueprint to follow. Going to the Emirates on Sunday. But I mean, first of all, just nice to be back in WSL action, because it's
been waiting ages.
Yeah, more than 4 months since.
I feel like a long time.
Yeah.
It's just been sitting around.
Yeah, just twiddling my thumbs the whole summer. So it's great to finally be back. And obviously, Liverpool have, as a result of that prolonged break for the Women's World Cup, have had a long pre season and time for the new signings to prepare. They've brought seven new players in. They've made a club record signing, and the new striker, Sophie Bowman-Hogg, who's obviously brought in to replace Katie Stengel, who has left. And I think, you know, that's a blow for Liverpool. You know, she scored 10 goals last season, which might not sound like a lot, but she was comfortably the top scorer. I think Missy Bo-Kearns was next with 4 goals across the season. So, you know, she will be a miss up front, but hopefully Roman Hall coming in, a Norwegian international, will sort of fill that void and more. And, you know, I think Liverpool last season, Matt Beard was quite candid about the fact he wanted to survive. Obviously, it was the first season back in the WSL. And he said this season, you know, we want to better that. You know, they finished 7th in the WSL last season. And I think now the difficult thing is there's still such a disparity in quality and funds between the top four, the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal and Manchester City. But I think Liverpool have really, really recruited well over the summer and really shown a statement of intent, you know, moving to Melwood as well. And I think for a long time, the club have had it levels and that they've neglected the women's team. I think that's absolutely been the case. You only have to look at them being relegated to the Championship when Jurgen Klopp's side won the Premier League to see that. But I think now they seem to be really sort of committed to building the women's team up, and, you know, fingers crossed they can start with a win on Sunday.
I feel like they're doing it in probably mirroring the first team in a slow build. You know, it's not like you say there's more money at other teams, but it doesn't feel like they're just throwing money at it. It feels like they're building it up slowly.
Yeah, it feels like there is a real strategy to it. And, you know, it will probably take another few transfer windows before I think Liverpool are competing at the top end of the table. But I thought it was quite interesting the other day because, like I say, Matt Beard last season was very frank about survival. But he the other day came out and said it'd be nice to win some silverware this season. And but that was really positive to see that the club are obviously now really sort of, they're not content with finishing mid-table. They want to be up there with those elite sides, and it will be a real test for them on Sunday. Arsenal are a top side. They finished third last season and they'll be going for the title this season. But, you know, they were beaten a couple of weeks ago. They went out of the Champions League in the first qualifying round. So they're not infallible. They were beaten on the last day of last season as well by Aston Villa. So I think, you know, the pressure's off Liverpool a little bit. I'm not sure anyone will be expecting them to go to the Emirates and to get a result. So that could all sort of play into their hands, I think, on Sunday.
Just to kind of interject and take your job for a minute, Joe. We've seen the boom period from the Euros, was it last summer? What do you think, what's the legacy going to be from the World Cup?
hopefully it will just continue that. I mean, a few months ago, I went down to St. George's Park and spoke to Baroness Sue Campbell, who's the director of women's football at the FA. And I think the word she used was it's turbocharged, the always turbocharged interest in the women's game. And we saw that. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, for example, on Sunday, 50,000 tickets being sold at the Emirates. The difference, the task now, I guess, is ensuring that it's not just these sort of big marquee games that attract big crowds. And, you know, when Liverpool play Aston Villa at Prenton Park the following weekend, how many people will be there? You know, will it be a few thousand, or can we start getting upwards of, you know, 5,000, 10,000 going to games consistently? And hopefully that's what the legacy of the World Cup will be. And, you know, for anyone who watched those games, hopefully, you know, they'll see that there is, it's obviously different to the men's game. It might be a different intensity, a different physicality, but it's still top quality football. And I think, you know, if you can, if you've got a spare afternoon to go and get behind the girls, either at Prenton Park or Wallenhall Park, for Everton or whatever, then, you know, it'd be great to see that them getting record crowds week in, week out.
Thanks, Beth. Sounds great. And it's going to be, I've told Beth that she needs to come on the podcast more often so we can talk Liverpool women, because, you don't turn up enough on this podcast. So, yeah, that will be for the season ahead. Well, Liverpool's men's team are also in North London, stay at the weekend. Tottenham, I mean, this is the biggest test of the season so far, isn't it? They're a buoyant Tottenham side. Seems to have a great, charismatic new manager, and they're going to be a tough test, aren't they?
Yeah, I think with that newfound confidence from Spurs, they're sort of providing that threat to the top four. They've been in and around it, but I think, especially with the show against Arsenal, where they're bouncing back almost straight away. Interesting to see how they line up with the see how Madison is.
Looks like he's going to be shit, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah, he's obviously going to be the key player. There's no money came, but it seems like he's fit that mental even better, maybe not so with the goals, but him and Son seem to have...
Better team for it, don't they? Yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd say that. I honestly thought after Kane they would really struggle, but they seem to knit together better, and yeah, they just seem the best team. So
it feels like the first time in a few years you're not just focusing on Kane and Son. Focusing on Son maybe, but you're looking at the whole team. There's threats across it. He spent well. Mickey van der Ven, obviously, who we know is linked with Liverpool throughout the summer.
Centre-back's good.
Yeah, and it's one of them things. It's another test for Liverpool, but it's probably one that you don't want to be falling 1-0 behind. Obviously, they've shown that character against Newcastle, which obviously one of the best comebacks they've seen under Jurgen Klopp so far. But it's just one of them games where I think Liverpool just have to go hammer and tongue like they always have. Klopp's certainly enjoying this football, and I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon.
They've done well at Spurs previously, but this feels a little bit different, doesn't it? I don't know. Really don't know what to expect on the weekend.
No, I don't, to be honest. I mean, Steve mentions there about, you know, some of the players looking good, and Basuma looks like a bright chance as well. Yeah. It looks like, you know, the player who was at Brighton. I'm not too sure what's happened there. Maybe playing devil's advocate a bit here, but I think Tottenham made the best start for decades, the start of last season under Conte, and it quickly unravelled, didn't it? Yeah. So maybe you'd temper that by saying they've massively turned the corner. I'm like you, I'm surprised by how well they've navigated, you know, a Kane-less squad, if you like, and they haven't really replaced them in the transfer market. Richarlison being asked to step up, and Son is now undoubtedly the main man, isn't he, as captain? But it's always a test there. Liverpool have got generally a really good record against Spurs over the years, the last sort of 10 years. But it's never easy away from home. It's I feel like this, for all the optimism that's been building for Liverpool last, six to 8 weeks, I think this will be one where you might get a bit of a reality check, or you start thinking, well, what can this team do? Because it's going to be a really interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a bit of a love-in, but I do quite like Postecoglou. He was a big Liverpool fan, wasn't he? He seems like the type of manager you can get behind. That it's no wonder he's become so popular so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, not to give my mum a shout out on the pod, but she for years has been saying that we should get Postecoglou at Liverpool. So he's...
Well, since like his Melbourne victory day.
Yeah, she's been touting him since then. No, probably more since his Celtic days. But yeah, he seems like a great fella, doesn't he? And I think there's probably similarities in a sense between where Liverpool and Tottenham are at the moment. They've both got some young players. It feels like they're at the start of a journey almost in a rebuild, and it will be interesting to see how they go head to head. I think it will be a real test, but I think the nice thing now is, I found myself getting a bit nervous about this game the other day, and then I thought, well, will Dominic Szoboszlai be dreading this trip to Tottenham? Will he be nervous? No, you feel like this Liverpool team now have a bit of swagger and a bit of confidence about them, and I think as much as it will be a real test, I think they will feel like it's a test that they can really take on and relish. So yeah, I'd be interested. I think it'll be quite close either way.
Yeah, yeah. Let's pick our teams. Alisson's back in goal, isn't he, Steve? How's your back four lining up then? Let's say Trent's fit.
I'll still stick with Gomez. I just think you don't want to, there's too many games left in the season for just to throw someone in as good as Trent is. But I think Liverpool, for having these sort of circumstances, don't do a team who are bubbling like Spurs. Yeah. Liverpool will just go there and just pause. I think Liverpool are in the perfect moment to do that. And that's, I think you don't want to disrupt the team too much, but I think the formula has sort of been building with Gomez at right back. Maybe not Matip, because I think Canardi will deal well with Son's sort of threat on the break, but I think the back four remains unchanged.
Yeah. Go on, see you go on with that.
No, I bring Trent back in. I just think for all the strides that Gomez has made of late, I just think Trent is just a game changer. As soon as he gets the ball, no matter where he is on the pitch, you're on the edge of your seat, thinking this could be a chance for Liverpool, and you don't get that with Gomez. So I'm bringing Trent back in. Andy Robertson's back in. Virgil van Dijk is back in, and Canate keeps his place.
Yeah, agreed. I think, you know, what Trent offers going forward, I think it could be quite a high scoring game. So I think, you know, having someone with his creativity on the pitch could be a real game changer for Liverpool. So yeah, I would go the same as Gorsty.
I'm going to agree with Steve. I think I just, especially with the type of injury Trent had, I think it could be quite a tough game to throw him back into. Obviously, Newcastle was quite a difficult one for him. So, don't know. We'll say that they got bright the following week, haven't they? So it's probably not the ideal time to throw him back in, but yeah, I thought Gomez has done well, so I'll keep him in there. Beth, we'll start with you in midfield. Obviously, Dom. But you hinted before that you might start Endo in there.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a game where we might need someone to sort of break up that play in the middle of the park, or, you know, stop some counter-attacks. I think Curtis Jones, as well as he's done. Yeah. You know, I think allowing Alexis McAllister to play a little bit further forward in his preferred position. I don't think Klopp will do this, by the way. I think he will probably stick with Jones.
Your team,
yeah.
Not the manager.
What does Klopp know? I think he will stick with Jones, McAllister and Szoboszlai, but I would be tempted to have McAllister a bit further forward and put Endo in there and just see what he can do. You know, if it doesn't work out, then take him off at half time if he's having a bad game. But I think I'd give him a whirl, because I think that's the only way we're going to see what he's made of.
Yeah, I think if there's a shout for Endo, I think it'll be with 20 minutes to go, protect the lead, a potential lead, and see it out. I think they're trying to reinvent McAllister a little bit at the moment, aren't they? And I think ultimately, you know, hopefully not disparaging Endo too much, but I think this might be one of those games where you lament the failure to get a really world-class number six. McAllister is adjusting on the job and learning the role as the weeks go by, but I think he'll probably stick with him and then Szoboszlai and Jones.
Steve? I think Endo's a good shout, with obviously how Bissouma has played this season. It's going to be like a bit like Chelsea at the beginning of the season, but I just think Jones, I've seen it yesterday where one of them players, you don't know what he does on the pitch, but he does something, and you don't realise how much of an impact he plays. I think McAllister,
I've seen him in person, I think makes a big difference in the press box last night. But I do think with Jones, he does a lot of the dirty work, especially on the left hand side. And I think watching him and watching how he plays tactically makes a massive difference.
That's what I mean. You don't really know, like, he just goes so unnoticed. Obviously, he doesn't play the flash balls. He tried to play a few in behind the defence, but I think he has to keep his position. McAllister, obviously, what he showed against West Ham with that pass from deep, I think it could be a decent chance to unlock that back four of Spurs if they're looking to go toe to toe with Liverpool.
Yeah, you made a good case for Endo, but I think for Liverpool in this game, the key will be to try and score early and try and burst that Spurs bubble, as you mentioned before, Steve. So I think they will go with McAllister and they will just try and get. Unfortunately, I don't really think they've got the personnel to sort of defend, so I think they would try and get the front foot and score. Steve, we'll go back to you for a forward line. I mean, there's so many options, isn't there?
Yeah, there's so many options, but I don't think it changes. I think they're very much...
Well, from the league.
From the league, yeah. But I think they've all pretty much nailed on the positions, I think. But it's almost brinkmanship between the front five, isn't it, where you don't know. If you don't play, if you have maybe drop a 7 out of 10 and someone does an 8, then they're in. It's perfect for Liverpool, and I think for that, it's just got to be more business as usual. Obviously, Gakpo did play well. Yeah. And it's probably, back of my mind, I do think Liverpool could go back to what they did against Wolves, where Gakpo does play as that false nine just to draw them out. But I just think when Nunes and just the lift he brings to the rest of the squad is just, it's phenomenal. And then I think with his pressing as well, Spurs haven't dealt with anything like that so far this season under the new era of Postecoglou, but I think that could be key.
Yeah.
I wonder whether Nunes might go on the left, because I remember at the game last season, Trent just picking him off for fun in that first half, and he caused all kinds of problems, Nunes, with his, you know, was running in behind him, his pace and his power. And if Spurs, you know, probably doesn't happen to Liverpool too often, but if Spurs push up, there is that space in behind to exploit. Yeah. So I just wonder whether he might go with Nunes off the left and possibly Gakpo through the middle. But, you know, as you say, if it's my team, I'm probably sticking with the West Ham.
Yeah.
Nunes down the middle and Diaz off the left.
Yeah, so. Yeah, same. Although I think Jota's definitely got to come on and score a 90th minute winner. A little snide, little tap in 90th minute.
I'd take that all day. Yeah, I'm the same. Predictions quickly. I'm going to say 2-2. I think a lot of goals in this. A lot of excitement. I just fancy Liverpool to get a couple, but I think it will be tough. Gav?
3-2 with Jota scoring the winner.
There we go. Yeah, there first. Go on, Steve.
Yeah, I can see an entertaining draw. Usually Liverpool could win, actually, but yeah. I'd take the draw. Yeah.
Best of the storm, I don't know. I was thinking 3-2, so I'm going to go 4-2. I reckon
there'll
be a few penalties in there with Romero and his rashness.
Yeah, fair play. I hope you're right, Steve. We will be back on Monday to talk about that Spurs game, to look ahead to the Europa League and much more. Thank you all very much for joining me. See you then.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.